Hi, and welcome back to the show. Today, I am joined by Dennis Dubner. He is the CEO of Wow24/7. They are a call center based in Eastern Europe and Latin America. I talked to Dennis about retention, how you drop attrition, which is really a killer for the call center industry. Dennis has nailed it. They have really low attrition, very high retention, and he puts it all down to culture, despite having a largely remote-based workforce, which, of course, is hard to embed a good, deep-seated culture within those environments. So really interesting conversation with Dennis. We also talk about, of course, AI, the conversation on everyone's lips at the moment. As always, if you want any of the show notes, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/podcast. Enjoy. This podcast is brought to you by Outsource Accelerator. We are the world's leading outsourcing marketplace and advisory. We help big and small businesses with their outsourcing needs, and we can help you too. We cover everything from offshore business and staffing strategy, optimal outsourcing structures, implementations, and fully managed services. If you are already outsourcing, about to start, or are somewhere in between, then we can ensure that you get the best from outsourcing. That's the best prices, best terms, and of course, the best results from your offshore operations. The Outsource Accelerator Marketplace now covers over 3,000 outsourcing firms, representing a global workforce of over 5 million people. We also host this leading outsourcing podcast, publish Inside Outsourcing, and have over 15,000 pages of content on the site. Because we span the entire market, we can ensure that you get the best deal possible. Get in touch today. Visit us at outsourceaccelerator.com/quote. Also, if you find this podcast interesting or valuable, please share it. We have now produced hundreds of episodes featuring the outsourcing world's most prominent luminaries. Please show your support by sharing this podcast today. So, Dennis, you are the CEO of Wow24/7. I'm always intrigued by the choice of names, what people come up with for business names. Wow certainly catches attention, and 24/7, I like those descriptive phrases. Maybe we can start by you just giving an initial elevator pitch of what Wow24/7 is and where you're positioning in the market.
So, Wow24/7 is a customer support outsourcing company. It's a rather small BPO with around 250 agents at the moment, with operations kind of all over Europe and Latin America. We are focusing primarily on e-commerce, travel, and SaaS, with, 95% of our operations in customer service. So the name Wow24/7 came at the time when 24/7 was the thing, where everybody wanted to provide a 24/7 support. That's how it was born. So the company was, initially born. So we were an internal team for our IT development companies. So we have product software development companies, different marketplaces. So we were an internal team for 8 years. And then we decided to start offering customer support services to other companies as well back in 2008. So we are back in 2016. So 2008, we started to service our own companies. And back in 2016, we started to offer services to other companies. So primarily to US, Germany, Australia, Singapore.
Fantastic. Really interesting that you were serving your own need internally, and then you decided to take on external customers. That's by no means a sort of rare pathway, but it is interesting. One of the sort of shining examples of that, I suppose, is Genpact. And they were the internal call center for GE, or General Electric, which is obviously certainly was one of the dominant companies in the world. And Genpact now is a publicly listed outsourcing firm, and GE only constitutes about 5% of their revenue. So there's a lot of potential for spinning these things off. Were you with the firm as a transition from internal to external facing?
I was actually not. No, right. I'm with the company for 2 years now. So, right. You know, I actually run several companies. The second one is called Translate.com. It's a SaaS tech company. And one of the products we have is the translation app for Zendesk users.
Right.
So, you know, it's connected to customer support as well.
Got it. How do you manage? How do you prioritize two different significant companies?
Good question. So it's not difficult. I think it's the matter of leadership style that I have. So I delegate a lot. So I lead by example, but I just empower people that are working with me more than some other people do. So it's not that difficult to run two companies at the same time.
Well done. So with Wild 24/7, then the nature of customer support has really, you know, changed and evolved tremendously. Do you voice, or is it all non-voice, you know, email, texting, things like that?
We do voice in 10 plus languages. Yeah, definitely doing voice, a lot of it. So we have, you know, specific programs to train agents.
That's incredible.
You know, speaking clubs and so on. So, yeah.
And so for only 250 staff, you're covering 10 languages. That must have significant operational, you know, complexity.
Absolutely. That's a great topic.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's all native languages. Like, you're not actually using, you know, like SaaS and AI to convert people's conversations. That is just people talking old school. Yeah.
It's just people talking old school, but we use AI for other purposes. It's not a customer facing function, but it is a supporting function inside the operations.
And we're going off track here a little bit, but have you seen the AI translation offerings, also accent neutralization offerings? Have you kind of investigated those? I assume they are still a little bit early. I imagine the latency is big, the sound isn't that great. Have you looked into those?
We have looked into those. We have also participated in the development of one of those, one of the major ones. I am not actually a big believer in it short term. It still requires a lot of time. Right. And it goes against the major topic that I wanted to talk about today as well, the agent experience.
Right.
So those software, you know, to work well, it has to be locally deployed inside the office for now.
Right.
Just for, the, you know, it requires a lot of resources in tech. And one of the major reasons why agents leave is that, you know, not you, but the whole industry makes them work from the office, and they would love to work remotely or at least in some kind of hybrid model.
Mm.
So that is a major conflict, not only within the technology, but also, you know, the what is the expectation for the agents.
Okay. And so just sort of setting the ground with WOW 24/7, you offer home-based work, is that, or you prefer people coming into the office?
I'm trying to get people to the office at least more than once a week, and I'm failing. So yeah, basically, yeah, it is remote hybrid model. Most of the agents, they work remotely. The middle management and the top management, we go to the office at least once a week. So yeah, but right. The trend is there, you know, definitely remote work. This is what agents want.
Yeah.
And you've got to listen to it. I mean, I know there is a trend of going back to the office, but we are used to working remotely already. We have invested a lot into the data security and different systems. So we are definitely doing fine in this department.
Yes. I assume you were office-based prior to COVID, and then, you know, the big switch happened.
That's right.
Yeah. And, you know, I sort of understand it in sort of when you've got a virus kind of hanging around. And of course, staff want to work from home, but, you know, I want to sort of eat burgers and pizza all day, but you know, it's kind of like there's a balance there, isn't it? Do you feel you can reach satisfactory levels of security and data security and all of that if people are at home?
You definitely can. You've got to adjust your processes for sure.
Mm.
But you definitely can. It took us a while to figure things out, but yeah, you know, we've done, you know, all the certification required. You can do this. It's not a big deal.
Right. Got it. Yeah, and so close to your heart is employee retention, reducing churn rates. Now, you know, that is like a pandemic itself within outsourcing firms, you know, really high churn. And it's very expensive, and of course drops the client experience, you know, if you're dealing with sort of new, untenured staff that don't really know their way around processes, it really kind of hampers. So what is your take on churn? How do you drop this thing? You know, and are there magic bullets to this? Are there sort of secrets that we need to hear?
I don't think you need to hear my secrets. I'm not going to give them to you.
No, I'd love to.
But I'll give you something. So yeah, basically, you know, the agent retention rate is one of the key performance indicators we have across all levels, right? From the team leader to the CEO. The reason for it is because it impacts so much every single department's ability to perform their work has influence on the agent performance within the BPO, right? And I'm just, you know, it's really sad, but I think that we as customer experience leaders have failed completely the task of retaining agents. The reason why I'm saying this is because, you know, it depends on, you know, what kind of stats you can get to, but let's say Invoca says, you know, they've interviewed for the moment like at 500 organizations and they came up with a number of 60% agent turnover rate on average within those 500 organizations. Some bigger research firms are reporting around 40 to 45% turnover rate. That's massive.
That's huge, isn't it? Huge.
That is huge. I mean, half of the people leave within a year, right? Yeah. So it's a big problem, and it's a costly problem for organization as well.
How avoidable is it? I was actually talking as a guest on another person's podcast the other day, and you know, I kind of liken it to, you know, we are a tech firm and we have developers and all that, and we have zero churn in those kind of jobs. Whereas when you're a big call center and you have 500,000 people, you know, up to 700,000 people that you're coordinating, inevitably it kind of becomes a bit of a conveyor belt, a bit of a factory feeling, and the humans are the machines in the factory, you know. But now, of course, these people get treated well and they have good environments, but I think they just become kind of cogs. Can you prevent that as you scale? You know, do people sort of become do they become more of a cog as you become bigger?
Yeah. So, you know, to talk about this KPI, I think we need to understand what is good and what is a bad number, right? In my opinion, it is nearly impossible to get below 10%. Just because...
This is per year, yeah?
This is per year.
Yeah.
This is per year. The reason for it is because typically at the call centers, contact centers, the agents have it's their first or second job. They are still still searching for, you know, what do I want to do in life and so on, right? Not everybody wants to stay for long, you know, talking to the difficult customers. So for that reason, it will always be above 10%, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So we are, as a company, way below 20, which is a good achievement, but still we can improve certain things. So statistically speaking, what influences the massive turnover rate? Number one reason is bad bosses. 57% of the agents leaving said that poor management is the main reason, right? So what can you do as an organization? First of all, hire the right management and train the management well, right? So, you know, you've got to make sure that you have good people managing teams, right? You need to have specific systems. We have we call it Excellency Center, as an educational center within the company. We train team leaders all the time. The human resources as function must be really efficient. So agents need to be able to speak to somebody if something goes wrong, right? The second largest reason is the utilization rate. You know, we are living in a world of tech companies layoffs and everybody's scared and everybody wants maximum efficiency from everybody, which I think is not a healthy thing to do within the contact center. So, you know, those kind of, I've seen, you know, many customers who come to work with us, they work with somebody else that had like 10 seconds between the calls kind of KPI. That's what people are allowed to do. And we don't work this way. I think, you know, we as an organization can find better places to find efficiency from, right? Therefore, you know, utilization rate, you've got to lower your agent utilization rate. you can still be super effective and efficient, but just don't do it at the cost of, you know, getting your agents overworked, right? And burnt out. So another reason is career advancement. You've got to show the path for the people who are entering into the contact center environment in general, right? You have to be able to see talent and grow talent and upskill them. Another big reason is what we've mentioned before is remote or hybrid work, at least, right? That's what agents expect. Nobody wants to go to the office. And of course, you know, the salaries and wages is something that pop up on the list of the reasons, but you know, it's never the top three, in my opinion. In general, I would say that, you know, we talk about customer experience a lot in every single industry, but I think, you know, we should start speaking about the agent experience a lot as well when it comes to the agent retention rates. So we have to look at the whole journey, starting from the moment when they don't know you as an organization to the moment when they stay with you for a long time and they become your ambassador and they promote you and they bring other people back, you know, into your organization. That's the best path forward, in my opinion. So you have to look at this every single stage of every single touch point interaction of this agent with you as an organization, and you've got to improve every single step of it.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? What, like, I heard recently, and you know, it sort of reminds me, but people stay for friends, and they say one of the biggest determinants is that if people have friends in the workplace, they're a lot more likely to stay, you know, because really work's work, isn't it? You know, and I assume, like, you know, there's accounts out there that suck, you know, some of the work is bad, and it's really difficult to really get enthused about a lot of that, but people will stay for their colleagues and their friends and the social bonds that they make at work, which is harder, isn't it, when people are remote. You know, how do you tackle these things of kind of bonding and culture and these things that tie people together when it is now dominantly a remote work culture? Do you think that people are getting less connected and more sort of just jumping around jobs?
I don't see it in our organization. I read about it, but I don't see it here. And I actually, you know, we do the surveys twice a year within, you know, measuring engagement rates on all levels in our company. And that the measurement, you know, do you have friends inside the company? It's one of the lowest scores from all other criteria. I don't even think it's relevant for some reason. Right. Because I don't, you know, our agents are not saying that they have the best friend inside their company, but still we have, you know, arguably the lowest attrition rate in the industry. So I actually don't think that you need to have like best friends inside the company. I think you have to be respected and you need to be within the respectful environment where people value each other, help each other for sure, but it doesn't have to be a friendship, in my opinion. You know, I'm sorry, but it's good.
It's interesting perspective, isn't it? Because I think different people want different things from their work environment, don't they?
Yeah.
Well, I do not need friends anymore at work, you know, and because I'm at a different stage of my life. Whereas if I was kind of 22, 23, you want to kind of hang out, you know, you want to kind of make bonds. So I suppose it depends on the type of person and the stage that they're in. What about culture as well? Do you think that is critical, or again, are some people now transactional? You know, just give me a good environment, a good job, I'll get it done. But, you know, we don't have to buy into all of these, you know, staff outings and bonding games and things like that.
Derek, I think company culture is the number one role of CEO.
Right.
And that role has to be, you know, performed so well that all the other levels of management are following. Right? So definitely, I think, you know, whatever happens in the company, good or bad, has impact on the company culture, and company culture impacts those outcomes as well, right? So it's a bilateral connection there. So definitely company culture is something that is really hard. When I was at business school, we talked about it all the time, and I was in Switzerland at the time. And there was a phrase that, you know, company called eats culture for breakfast, meaning that it's really difficult to change the company culture. But we are at the company size, you know, where we can still quite easily influence the culture. You just have to make the right decision every single time. That's easy.
And it's, you know, this industry that we're in, it's very people heavy, isn't it? Because you can get some tech startups and they can be $1 billion revenue with 100 people, you know, and it's not so people heavy. Whereas even small companies have hundreds or thousands of staff within this sector. So, and the culture is what glues everyone together, isn't it? So it's so, so critical in this industry. And it's really critical to get it right. How do you transmit that culture, though, when people are remote, they're sitting in front of the computers, and, you know, like, you're probably very well aware of it, but how do you get it down the ranks and really sort of embedded into the everyday man?
Regular meetings, you know, you need to recognize the agents that are glue people, right? People with good sense of humor, people who can support each other. So those kind of leaders we want to see in our companies. It doesn't mean that they are formal leaders. The leaders, they could be informal leaders. They don't have to occupy the leadership position, but we definitely want to keep those people for as long as we can. Regular meetings, we also do some other activities online, meeting, you know, speaking clubs and different activities. And we are trying to meet each other, you know, once in a while, at least, you know, once a quarter, once every 6 months, if we can. Right, depends on the, you know, on the team. Right, some teams are locally working together in one city. Some people are not. So sometimes it's not possible.
Got it. And you must get a lot of collaboration and cohesion within accounts. Okay, but do you typically get a lot of crossover between accounts? In that, you know, they wouldn't necessarily come across each other in a normal day's environment, I would imagine. So are you trying to also have, you know, cohesion sort of inter account?
Depends, right? So in some instances, yes. So, you know, but there are functions that go across different projects and different accounts as well, right? So, you know, for example, quality assurance, you know, they kind of work with different teams and they have joint meetings as well. You know, they do trainings, upskilling, certain things, right? But yeah, so I think it depends.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Huh? And I think our perception of culture and how it should be distributed is different to the Gen Zs and millennials that are, they're kind of truly different people, both in terms of how they interact and culture, aren't they? In terms of, you know, they're digital first fundamentally. And so it is a new, brave new world that we're entering, isn't it? And maybe, you know, being highly generalist here, but a lot of the socialization happens online, on phones, in forums and stuff like that. So maybe that is the new kind of default for building these relationships and culture and communication.
Definitely. The newer generation that is entering the workforce right now, they are quiet quitters. So they don't complain much. So when things go wrong and you know about it, it's already too late. So for that reason, that's what I mentioned before, your HR function has to be really young and very, you know, staying within the same culture with them. So they can get a sense of what's going on. They have to speak to the employees all the time. So I know there was a tendency, like, you know, 5 to 10 years ago when human resource as a function was kind of very depreciating all the time, year by year. But at the moment, I think the HR function is getting more and more important in every single organization just because of that reason. The newer generation is different.
Yeah. Yeah, and changing so quick, isn't it? It's, you know, maybe the intergenerational difference was not so stark before, but now it really, really is tremendous just between sort of two or three generations. And it requires different navigation of those people, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
What I've noticed, you know, I talk a lot about global employment, the concept of, you know, we should all now be employing people globally. And of course, you embrace that, but, you know, every business in the world should be embracing global employment. And what I find amazing now is that the world seems very connected. You talk about the quiet quitting, you know, before there was a sort of great resignation, there was the whole thing from COVID and, you know, workers really kind of saying what they want and calling the shots. And now that cycle is reversing a little bit. But it's amazing how globalized all of these trends are. Yeah, you know, they're not so pocketed anymore. We're not just talking about US culture is doing this and Eastern Europe's doing that. It's kind of, they're trends that spread right across the globe, aren't they? It's amazing.
Amazing, isn't it, Derek? I've been lucky enough to travel to 55 countries at the moment, right? And I was actually pleasantly surprised how not different are we as a globe, right? So Chinese culture was, yes, different to the Colombian culture, but still certain things are the same. And we talk about, 10, 15 years ago. So now, right now with social media, with TikToks and YouTube, I think we are getting very similar.
It's fascinating, isn't it? I think there's still pockets. Like generally I'm finding there's labor shortages around and it's really hard to find really good people. Now, of course, that doesn't apply in, Venezuela, they're desperate for work, and a lot of Africa, they're, desperate for work, and even South Africa and things like that. But generally you're finding sort of quite highly correlated alignment between all of the main markets, which is pretty significant, because as well, a lot of the call centers, they went global to try and arbitrage everything and mix and match to the benefit of the client or the supplier or whatever. But if everything actually becomes completely homogenized, you could just be in one spot. Yeah.
It's definitely very interesting, Derek. But, also I'm looking at the numbers at the agent turnover rate in different geographies, right? And it's not that different. So that's kind of universal as well,
right?
Which is interesting, right? And AI is the thing that's going to change everybody's life in the future, including the contact center, how it's managed, how it's run. The measurements of the customer experience at the moment are not good. So basically, Forrester just released their report on the customer experience quality, and it has fallen for the second consecutive year in the US. The Canadian CX index shows the lower customer experience quality since 2016. The UK customer service index is at its lowest since 2015. And that's because we cannot retain agents. That's first reason. And the second is the AI. We are trying to adapt it and it doesn't work.
Right.
In the end, the customers are those who are suffering from our trial and error.
It's crazy, isn't it? You must think that after 30 years of trying to do customer service, you would get incrementally better. But if nothing's changed and actually it's getting worse in terms of customer satisfaction, it's like, is the industry progressing, or is it just customer expectations are changing, or is it that the remit of what customer service means is getting so much broader? Now it's omni-channel. Or is it because the product is getting increasingly complex? It's really difficult to unpick, isn't it? But is it really the case? Because as well, we've got all this technology, which is hopefully enhancing the role of a customer service agent, in terms of all these fancy CRMs and suggested answers. And as you say, sort of the emergence of AI, but that's just incredible, isn't it? What does it say for the industry if we're not able to actually...
But I think also, the AI developments are too fast. It's really hard. And it's the agents get anxious. It's really hard to get, for a contact center leader to get to his team leaders to say, hey, you need to go back to your agent, say, hey, we are actually implementing a great AI tool. And no, it's not a danger to your job, but everybody knows it is, right? So how do you handle that kind of resistance on the agent level and get the middle management to buy them in? That's a massive conflict.
Yeah, but is it doing a better job?
It's not doing a better job. So, the self-service capabilities is the number one priority in terms of investments in the contact centers at the moment, because everybody wants to try it, but it doesn't work yet for many reasons. One is technology, right? So the integration between different systems is not there. Maybe if you are a massive organization like, Zalando or Amazon, you can integrate many things, right? You have your own warehouse software, you have own this and that. So you can probably make your data flow between different tools seamlessly. But if you are an SME, you are not getting all the data at quickly between different tools. So you will need a person to go into the DHL and see where the parcel is and to go and check, you know, how the person can do this and that, because the agent uses 15 plus different tools in different organizations. So can you seamlessly integrate it? No, you can't.
You know, and that's where I feel the AI is. You know, people worry that AI is going to take everyone's jobs. And I'm like, the world increases, is continually increasing in complexity. As you say, you know, there's all these individual modules that need to be fit together, and then there's space in between for things to go wrong that kind of someone needs to go and figure out. And I think it's going to be a long time before, you know, truly intelligent AI can actually go and figure all of that stuff out, because it's actually a failure within the product or the process, isn't it? It's not a failure within customer service, and then it's customer service's job to go and fix all of that.
That's right. So then when things go wrong, what do you need to do? You need to pass the conversation on to the human being, back and forth. And I think that effort has also failed at the moment. That's why we see the decreasing quality in the customer experience industry in general, because it's really difficult. You know, the AI started asking, you know, 10 different questions and the person has answered, but then can you pass seamlessly the context and the history of this conversation to the agent that will immediately, within a fraction of a, you know, small time, within seconds, to get to this conversation without getting customer upset?
Because it, you know, if you had really seamless systems and then everything could be resolved by a simple sort of FAQ or simple logic that says if this then that, then actually that's not complex, and the technology we have now could fix that, and you actually wouldn't have any customer service issues, would you? It is just actually when things slip through the gaps and, you know, the process or the product isn't working as it should, and then you're troubleshooting those more complex things. It's, you know, it's strange. Like, the cutting edge of technology is incredible, but as I say, the future's not evenly distributed. You know, I still phone my English bank, one of the major banks in the UK, and they have one of those crappy IVRs from 20 years ago, and I swear to God, it has not been updated in 20 years, and it asked me to tell them my account number in using my voice, and it can never understand my name, my birth date, the account number, you know. And
it's, yeah, it's like, horrible.
You know, and that's a legacy system from 20 years that they haven't even bothered to update, you know. So it's crazy.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, you know, my take on the AI is the following. So I think for the moment, the agents are safe. From 5 to 10 years from now, I think the first line of support will be gone. But some of those agents that were working in the, you know, on the first line of support, they will become kind of knowledge management specialists. So they will know how to feed the data to the AI assistants in the right way and how to structure the data, how to organize it. So I think that's kind of the major shift in function of the agent for the future.
Yeah, I certainly don't think it's really going to be wiping out too many jobs, unless you have a really tight product and tight processes, and really the AI is just dishing out answers to an FAQ, which, you know, that technology has been available for 15 years anyway, but there's a long way to go.
In the realm of simple knowledge bases and simple workflows, AI works well. So, you know, we have been setting assistants up for the past a little over a year, and it works perfectly, but within a limited format. So you just need to know what you can demand from it.
And so getting back to you, Wow 24/7, you know, how do you balance providing staffing to get a good result versus can you ramp it up with technology, drop the number of staff that you're working with and still maintain a result? Like, where do you, are you driven to find that perfect balance, or, you know, where does that sort of responsibility lie? Or is it with the client to sort of push you along there? How do you sort of find balance with that, with your own processes that you're building?
Yeah, so the balance is actually the key here. I'm happy to hear the balance word, because, you know, we are, as an industry in general, we are way too focused on A, technology, B, KPIs. I love KPIs, but as a guidance, not something very, you know, concrete. by the way, agents are, you know, great at manipulating KPIs. So, you know, if you as a manager think that this team has made X KPI and that's good or bad, you're wrong. You know, it has to be just the guidance, right? So the balance is the following. So we are here to help the customer in the best possible fashion, right? So the customer experience, the CSAT and the NPS and all those indicators are a great guideline and something that we strive for, but we actually look at the process of what is going on and what is best for the customer. Simple questions that can be self-answered, you know, the self says can be answered with self-service. We definitely should set it up and optimize the cost because, you know, unfortunately, you know, contact centers are still, in most cases, considered as cost centers, not as value centers, which is a different issue to talk about. But anyhow, we definitely should, as BPO, save a cost for the customer, yet providing higher customer satisfaction scores than they ever had. So, and this is done by the right balance of the self-service and the real human being, you know, engaged, trained, well-motivated, and staying long at their jobs.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating balance, isn't it? And, you know, coming back to your product then, do you design and build the processes on behalf of the client, or how much, you know, just generally not talking about AI so much now, but, or is it sort of a equal collaboration with the client, or how kind of deep do you go into building these processes out?
So we are arguably the most flexible company in the industry. So, you know, we get a lot of customers coming to us who used to work with some BPO that made them follow their own process or their own CRM and this and that. Right, we don't do that. So we typically onboard the client with their own processes, and within the onboarding, we kind of make it gradually better, but also investing time and knowledge in the future over time to improve things. Right, so we actually don't make our customers follow every single word that we say. So we find that balance all the time. We are an extension to their team, typically. Right. So we are, and the closer we are to our clients, the better it is, because, you know, we talk about the agent retention here, but client retention is extremely important in the BPO industry as well. So we have to focus on that too.
Yeah. It's fascinating blend, isn't it? You know, and some of these are pretty complex. And as you say, like, these are value add functions. Like, it's a shame when, you know, all this, it's the customer connection point, and it's a shame when it's just diminished to a cost center that should be minimized. It's really not setting it up for success, is it?
Absolutely. But also, you know, we need to know that, you need to understand statistically, 2023, 63% of contact center leaders were facing staffing shortages and have issues with finding, hiring, retaining agents. The reason for it is the recruitment is becoming more and more and more expensive year by year. Right. So companies started to fire recruiters and they don't have enough. So a recruiter within a larger organization gets to work on certain positions, right? And they have the senior developer, they have the account executive, and they have the SDR, and they have the customer support agent. The question is, what do they consider more important for their organization, where the priorities are? So for that reason, as a future of outsourcing, I see it very bright. And, you know, statistically speaking, I think that like 6% of more organizations are going to outsource their customer service next year than they did last year. So it was like 58% of organizations were outsourcing, and the next year it will be like getting to 64%. That's the prediction, just for that reason. Because inside the organization, you just cannot hire and train agents fast enough.
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it? Everything is a fine margin, and it's super competitive in every aspect, isn't it? Just even the back end logistics of making sure that you have enough people to do the job. It's a fascinating industry. Dennis, thank you so much. I mean, it's really fantastic insights, and always good to hear different approaches to culture and, you know, retention, which is just such an absolute key part of a business, but also critical for getting the results for the client. So really fascinating insights. As always, Dennis, I encourage people to reach out and have conversation and really explore things. How can they How can they reach out to you and learn more about WOW 24/7?
Two ways. First one, you know, we have Contact Center Perspectives podcast, where you'll see me and other hosts and other guests, the leaders within the contact center industry. And you can find me on LinkedIn, Dennis Dubner, D-N-Y-S, Dubner, D-U-B-N-E-R. So you can reach out to me. I always check my LinkedIn all the time.
That was Dennis Dubner, the CEO of WOW 24/7. As always, if you're on any of the show notes, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/podcast. And if you want to ask us anything, just drop us an email to ask@outsourceaccelerator.com. See you next time.